You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
I know you'll be alright, even when times get hard and you feel like you're in the dark. You will see just how beautiful life can be when you soften your heart. You can finally start to live your truth. Life.
Hello, welcome back. It's your host, Lisa Haim. And today is a special episode because it's with one of my lifelong friends, Shayna Angris, who was diagnosed with breast cancer and kicked its ass. And this episode is actually recorded in person, which is such a treat because most of my episodes are recorded over Zoom. And in person with Shayna, given our long-term history, it was really cool to, you know, see her be vulnerable, tune into places where I could see she was getting emotional, dive a little bit deeper, kind of recognizing that, you know, she felt safe enough to do so. And it just really re-inspired me as to why I started this podcast. I know I get to talk to awesome people who have been through hard things and made it out the other side. And bringing these conversations online to share the wisdom was my goal. And this was just a reminder of how important it is to connect with people about the hard things in their life and learn from them and not be afraid to shy away from questions because you think that they're necessarily too personal. Obviously, doing that respectfully is key and a fine art that I'm always refining. But, you know, everything that I asked in this episode, because of our unique relationship and knowing her so well, I feel like I learn so much. How to support somebody going through breast cancer or any sickness, how to advocate for myself in health situations. And a few weeks ago, you may remember, we had on Margaret, who is battling breast cancer. And I think both stories are like beautiful back to back because it's two women with two completely different approaches that are taking the empowered choice, even though that empowered choice looks completely different on them. And I'm so inspired by the both of them. And this is not an apples to apples conversation. Margaret's and Shayna have different types of breast cancer and different situations. But we are talking about health, and both of them are in control. You'll feel that from both of them. And nonetheless, the methodologies of tackling it are so different. And I think that speaks volumes about our health, and the best choices for us are going to be only known to us in that moment. Lastly, I just want to share that I was talking to Shayna about how I love doing these podcasts and having it as a platform to impact people. And I know that thousands of people listen, but one of the downsides of it is I record on a random day, it goes live on a random day, and you listen on a random day. And it's not like a conversation where you get that direct feedback and like energy exchange. So I wanted to let you know, if you're an avid listener, I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from DMs that you loved this episode or what specifically resonated. If you share it with a friend, I'd love to hear about that too. And really just anything that's like resonating, I truly would love to hear back from you and just build more community within this place that I know exists. So thank you all for listening. Thank you for living your truthiest life. And huge shout out to Shayna for coming on The Truthiest Life, being a longtime listener and impacting people in the way that you do simply by being you. Let's take a listen. Welcome, Shayna.
Hi.
This is crazy. You're like my most loyal fan, one of my oldest friends.
From the very beginning.
Of life or The Truthiest Life?
Both.
True. We go back as early as sixth grade. And actually, you don't know this, but I've always wanted to have you on here. But I didn't have the courage to ask you because you're a private person. You don't share that stuff. And I don't know. It's like, this is a deeply personal part of your story and life, sort of.
It is. I think I'm happy to share what I've been through because I know that I'm not alone in what I've been through. And hopefully when I share my story and people hear it, they either learn from it and can apply it to their own lives. And everyone knows someone who's been through what I went through. So I just hope it's helpful.
Okay. So let's just start from, how would you describe your life before your breast cancer diagnosis?
It was great. Like, I had a very smooth life. I went to the college I wanted. I went to the grad school I wanted. I met my husband at a young age. We got married. We had kids. Everything sort of went according to plan. Everything was very smooth. I had no issues with finding a partner, finding a job, having kids.
I found you your partner.
You did find me my partner. I'll give you credit for that one. But everything was going according to plan. And I was young. I had, you know, got married at 25. I had my kids by the time I was 29 and just felt like I was about to get started on like my time of life, that I was getting my body back and my kids were growing and I was about to just start living my life for me. And then it's almost exactly 4 years ago, like almost to the day, I was like 30 and a half, and I went to my gynecologist's appointment for my regular routine checkup, and I had felt a lump in my left breast, and that was sort of the start of basically like a big marker of my life of like before and since.
Right. Before that, you were a child, but a grown-up child, because mm-hmm. you did get married early in terms of like our friend group, right? How old were you when you got married?
So I was 19 when I met my husband. We got engaged at 24, married at 25. And I was the first one definitely in our group of friends to get married.
And have kids.
And have kids. Right. Yeah. By a few years.
Right. So your kids are about how old when you got sick?
When I was diagnosed, they were 3.5 and 1.5. They were babies.
When I say actually, like when you got sick, is that the correct terminology?
I mean, yeah, it is. Like, I use the phrase like from when I was diagnosed, because that's like the marker of time. But yeah, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And from then on, like, I was sick. Like, I don't think I ever presented as a sick person.
Right.
So it's weird to describe it that way, but that's the reality. I was sick. I had breast cancer. Yeah.
Right. But then I'm just curious, like when I think of myself as being sick, I can't get out of bed. Was there ever a day that you didn't get out of bed? Or, I mean, you had a 3.5 and a 1.5 year old. Like, that's not an option.
I mean, that was sort of the hardest part, was that from the time I was diagnosed, it was very quick. I went, you know, I had mammogram, ultrasound, biopsy, and then from there, MRI, scheduling surgeries, scheduling chemos, like figuring all of that out. And the only thing I really cared about was like, am I going to be okay for my kids? Am I going to still be the type of mom that I am to them? I was a very present, hands-on mom. I did everything with them. And would that still be able to continue? And how is our life really going to change? And it did. I, you know, I had chemotherapy in the beginning. It was treatments every other week. And then I switched to a different drug. And then it was every week. And thankfully, I had a very good reaction to the chemotherapy. Like, it wasn't like what you see in the movies where I was really, really sick and throwing up all the time. Like, I didn't throw up once the entire time, but there were days that I felt really tired and that sort of my brain was in a fog, and I would stay in bed for maybe a day after each treatment and then try to get right back into it and get back to my regular mom duties of, you know, walking my kids to school and doing pickup and still being the present mom that I wanted to still be.
So let's just walk this back a little bit more slowly. Now we got like the big picture of kind of, and people know that it's been 4 years, so you're on the other side, which is beautiful. But walk it back for me too, because obviously I know you, I know your story, but even like as a friend, as like a loved one of yours, It was very hard to like grasp everything that was happening. First of all, I was living in DC at the time, so I was far away. And for somebody your age to, and one of your closest friends, like to all of a sudden be like, I have blah, 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 which you'll tell us like your exact diagnosis. It meant like nothing to me because I was unfamiliar with this type of breast cancer, unfamiliar with this stage, unfamiliar with like what the prognosis meant coming from the doctor. And looking at you like through the steps, like you weren't a typical, no, I shouldn't say typical. You were not the person that made sick your identity. I feel like you made getting better your identity. And neither right or wrong, like it just, whatever you are going through, if you are sick and you're not beating it, that becomes your identity. If you are crushing it, responding well to treatments, that's your identity. So for me, I don't know, I kind of feel like it was like this, oh my God. And then like, you just kind of like soared up. And I don't know if that was actually the trajectory, but along the way I lost touch of like the details.
I kind of love the way you put it, that I didn't put getting sick, being sick as my identity. It was about getting better, because from the minute I was diagnosed, that was the worst news that I heard. Mm-hmm. You have stage one triple negative breast cancer. I also found out at the same time that I was learning all of this that I also have a genetic mutation. I have BRCA1 positive, which is a genetic mutation that puts you at a higher risk for breast cancer and other types of cancers. But it really was that was the worst news, is you have breast cancer, you have this genetic mutation. And after that, yes, I had to go through chemotherapy and I was sick and all that, but it really was an upward journey of, this is working, your tumors are shrinking, everything is going as it should, and I was responding well to treatments. And I think my husband is also part of this, is he never treated me like a sick person, and he never let me wallow in sickness. It was always like, he would say to me, whatever you need, we are here. If you need a day to rest, if you need this, we're here. But unless you tell me what you need, we're business as usual. Our life is regular. Like, we're going out for dinners, we're going out with friends, we're doing family things that we have always done. And yes, this is a huge life-changing thing that's happening to us, but that doesn't mean every aspect of our life has to change. And it really didn't change. Like, yes, we had like treatment Tuesdays where our routine on Tuesday was different. Like, I would wake up in the morning, my husband would get my kids ready for school, I would leave our apartment, I would stop at the bagel store to get a bagel and coffee, and I would walk up to NYU for my chemo treatments. And then he would get the kids to school, come meet me at the hospital. Like, it was almost like we were on a date on Tuesdays. Like, we sat in our little cubicle and he would work and I would read or watch a show on my iPad, but it was still like somehow quality time. Like, going through cancer is really, can be so challenging on a relationship and on family dynamics, but we tried to keep as much else as normal as possible so that it didn't change everything.
I think that's really great advice. And obviously, when you got married and you say through sickness and health, you don't expect the sickness part to come 5 years after marriage in your 30s and really deal with that. But I think that a lot of relationships might rise to the occasion initially when somebody is sick, but it does have wear and tear on a relationship. You know, like, your trajectory was positive, for lack of a better word, like the treatments were working. But like, can you imagine, you know, for people where the treatments aren't working, the financial burden, the strain of the children, the dynamic shift, you know, you were also like went along for his plan of like business as usual, right?
And like, thankfully, like, modern medicine is like really magical. Like, you go in for treatment and yes, I'm there to get these chemo drugs, but now there's so many other medications and other things that you can do to make sure that you feel okay while you're in treatment, so that I didn't feel nauseous. I didn't feel all the side effects that could have come from chemotherapy to help me feel as well as I could. Like, I went to acupuncture, like, I don't know, 2 to 3 times a week while I was in treatment, just to like build my immune system and keep me feeling good and whatever that did for me. But thankfully, everything was on an upward trajectory. It's almost like I was living my life and then it plummeted with diagnosis. And then it was upward from there, and until, you know, it was 6 months of chemotherapy. I lost my hair.
And then shaved your hair head off before you lost it, though, right?
Well, so my hair before I got sick was long and lush, and it was like such
it is now though. It's 4 years later. It's beautiful. I'm looking at it.
But it was such a big part of my personality to myself. I don't think anyone else really cared about my hair.
No,
but
you had great
hair. I loved my hair. It was, you know, I got a blowout twice a week. It was always, it was shiny, healthy, lush, flowing. And that was, to me, like, honestly, when I was meeting with my breast surgeon, and the first thing I said to her was, am I going to lose my hair? And she was like, yes, you are. But that's how you know the medicine's working. You know, chemotherapy targets the most actively growing cells in your body, which are your hair, your skin, your nails. Mm-hmm. So your hair is sort of the first thing to go. But what they recommended to me is that I cut it short first, just for my kids to sort of aid them in the transition, that, you know, it's not like mom has hair down to her waist and now she's bald, but it was, I have hair down to my waist, then it's at my chin, then it's a little shorter. And then finally one day I was sitting on the couch with my husband and my scalp just started to burn. Like, it felt like it was burning.
That's the chemo?
I lost my hair in between my first and second chemo treatment, which is what's supposed to happen. It's so quick. But it was sort of like the hair follicles releasing but still being attached to my head. So the next day, it was a Sunday, that next morning I shaved my head and that was it.
Your body language changes a little bit right now as you're like remembering the, is it the burning that you're remembering or the emotional?
I know, I'm touching my hair a lot right now, aren't I?
No, just like your candor around the story changes a little bit because it was that like the most palpable thing of like, I'm sick?
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than a 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
Was that like the most palpable thing of like, I'm sick?
I feel like losing my hair was what made me look sick. Like, there are so many people with so many illnesses that you can't see from the outside, and they look normal They look healthy from the outside, but what's going on in the inside, you can't tell. And once I lost my hair, it was almost like my armor was gone. And now I had a choice. Am I gonna wear a wig and, you know, pretend to still be the same me that I was before? Am I gonna lean into baldness? How am I gonna accept this new physical change? And I really attached a lot to what that physical change meant. Like, does that now mean that I'm a sick person because I'm bald, my eyebrows are thinning, my eyelashes are falling off? Like,
I think I might unravel. I'm just gonna.
It's okay.
No. I mean, even just, I meant like if I went through it, you know, I'm somebody that really works on self-acceptance and everything, but at the same time, like your physical identity outside of like aesthetics or like other people, it's just like, this is who I am. This is what I look like. Mm-hmm. This is my outward connection to air and people. Like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden you are different.
It's gone. Like you look completely different. And my face got a little puffier. Like just all, there were all these different physical side effects that had more of an emotional impact on me. But I don't know how I had this strength, because I think looking back on it, I don't know how I did it, but I kind of just like kept on going business as usual.
Yeah, but you decided to cut it off after that, right? After the burning?
I shaved my head. Yeah, the next morning it was gone.
Right, you had a video.
Yeah. I have a video, like a time lapse. And like what's crazy is I look back at that video and I'm smiling the whole video. Like I'm in this little cubicle. I don't know. Like my smile looks genuine. Like I'm sitting, this guy, you know, he buzzes it short and then he goes and I'm looking in the mirror the whole time and we're chatting and I'm laughing and I'm smiling. And at the end, he spins me around to look in the mirror and I smile.
Oh, you're not even witnessing it as it goes.
Like kind of, but then he like gives me like a little twirl and I'm like, heh, you know, this is what I smile.
This is it.
But I did wear my wig for 4 months. And then once my hair started growing back, just a little stubble, I was like, I can't do this anymore.
And like, just is it itchy or it's just
no,
like...
I just was like done with it. And I really started to think, who am I wearing this wig for? Is it so that other people aren't afraid? Like, is it so that I am maintaining this appearance that I used to be? Like, who is it helping? Mm. And it wasn't helping me. So one day I was just going out for the day and I looked at my nanny at the time and I was like, I'm not going to wear my wig anymore. And she looked at me kind of like I was crazy and was like, you sure you want to leave the house like that? And I was like, yeah, why? Like, I thought I had a lot of hair. I had a little stubble. And then from then on, I never wore the wig again.
That regrowth confidence.
Yeah.
You rocked the stubble, the bald, whatever you want to call it. Like, I had
no choice, you know?
No, you did have a choice, though.
Yes, I could have kept wearing the wig. I mean, at your wedding, which mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to get to it yet, but
yeah, it's just
I went to your wedding 2 weeks after my double mastectomy.
We didn't know if you were going to come, right?
I didn't think I'd be able to fly. I didn't think I would feel up to it. Honestly, I don't know how I did it. I traveled with a neck pillow and I could barely lift my arms above my shoulder. And
Thanks for coming.
I was completely flat. I had very short hair, but I was like, not going to miss your wedding. Like I had to be there. And I made it and I danced. I stayed up till I was one of the last ones standing.
So you had double mastectomy. So you got both out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, both out.
And since then you have implants?
Now I have implants, yeah.
Okay. So going back again just to the beginning, I wouldn't describe myself as a regular breast lump checker myself. Mm-hmm. Like I know I'm supposed to do it. I think like once I found a lump on myself, but like almost by happenstance, which ended up being fine. Were you looking for something? Like is this something you regularly do?
No.
Or did at the time?
No, it's not something I had regularly
checked.
How did
you notice the lump?
So my lump was on my left breast, like close to my armpit. And it was kind of this thing where I had noticed it one day, maybe when I was like getting dressed or something, and I didn't think anything of it, like not at all. And then it's like kind of a blur, whether it was like my husband who was like, what is that? Or I was like, can you look at this? And he was like, we should probably like get it checked. But it was really just by chance that I had this appointment with my gynecologist. Like it wasn't like...
Oh, you didn't make the appointment to go check
it? No, it was not like, I feel this lump and I need to get it checked. It was like, oh, I'm going to the doctor. Like I'll have her check it. You know, I'm here anyway. But I had no reason to believe, or I had no suspicions that it was anything major, because I was 30 and didn't like think that something like this could happen to me.
And we do hear about people getting lumps all the time and you know, they check them and they're fine. And
exactly.
Okay. So your appointment wasn't for that. So you went in and you had your regular
checkup. It was a new doctor. And I had showed her the lump and she was like, it's probably nothing. It's probably a cyst, but I want you to go for imaging just to be sure. And what I've learned in the last 4 years in talking to a lot of people is that I'm very lucky that I had a doctor who erred on that cautious side to say go get it checked, because so many doctors are sort of dismissive of lumps in young people because more often than not it's not something, but like when sometimes it is.
Yeah.
And she was really, she's 100% saved my life by sending me to go get imaging, because from the time of my first imaging, which was like a week after that appointment, until my final MRI before I started chemo, my tumor had doubled in size. So this was like a very fast growing, aggressive cancer that I thankfully caught before it got to be a bigger situation than what it was.
And unfortunately, from knowing people who have had cancer now, I'm a little bit more familiar with different phrases such as stage one versus stage four. Mm-hmm. What does stage one mean exactly?
So the stages have to do with the size of the tumor and the location of the tumor, if it's localized just to the breast or if it goes into your lymph nodes. My tumor was small and it was not in my lymph nodes.
Even once it doubled in size, you were still safe?
Never got to my lymph nodes. Okay. Still stage one, yeah.
But I do remember, and you said it earlier, you know, you said triple negative.
Yes.
What does that mean? Because I think like hearing anything with numbers, you're just like, it's really bad. It's triple negative. What
right.
does that mean?
So there's three different types of hormones that are part of cancer cells. There's estrogen, progesterone, and this other hormone called HER2. And basically, the way my doctor described it to me is like, imagine your cancer cells are a circle and there's these three notches. And those are the three hormones. And the chemotherapies like are like a key to go into those three locks. She's like, triple negative means you don't have any of those hormones in your cancer cells. What she explained to me then, I was like, so does that mean that my cancer cell has no keys? Like there's no key that can unlock these locks? But then she said, no, you just need an aggressive form of chemotherapy because it will target those cells. And that's the standard course of care for your type of cancer.
And when they told you that you had cancer, did they say like the prognosis is this, the prognosis, like, did they give you anything?
No.
I remember feeling like it was daunting at first. Like the story that we've described so far has sounded very much like, you have cancer, okay, do treatment, then you get better. But I remember being like, no, wait, this is bad.
Yeah, so my doctor told me not to Google my type of cancer, that I won't like the numbers that I see if I Google. And then I asked her, you know, like, am I going to be okay? And she kind of frankly said to me, she's like, I can't answer that, but we are going to do everything we can, and this is our treatment, and we believe it's going to be effective. And that was kind of enough for me. I got, you know, a second opinion from different doctors. I went to a different hospital. I ended up being treated at NYU, and all my doctors were at NYU, but I wanted to get a second opinion somewhere else. And I just really felt cared for by the doctors at NYU. I really liked my care team. They worked well together. They were also all women, which I really thought was important. And I trusted that they knew what they were talking about and that they believed that this course of treatment was going to give me the best chance to beat my cancer and survive for as long as possible.
So they gave you your action plan. And at any point, did you look up the statistics of your type of cancer, by the way?
Yeah, but I really listened to them when they said, like, don't look, like, don't attach yourself to these numbers. And I really didn't. Mm-hmm. My treatment plan did change from the first appointment when I met with them. Originally, I was going to have my surgery first and then do chemotherapy after. But then when I went for that MRI and they saw that the tumor had doubled, my oncologist basically said, like, this was on a Tuesday. And she was like, we're changing our minds. We want to do the chemotherapy first and we're going to start on Friday, like in 3 days.
Right.
And I was like, oh.
And you were expecting like months
I was expecting to have a surgery a few weeks later, yeah. Have a month to recover from surgery and then start chemo. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait, I'm starting chemo in 3 days. What does that mean for my family? How am I going to feel? Like, it shook things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that first chemo treatment, like, my entire family came. They wore these hats. It was like it was a circus. It was so ridiculous.
You liked it or didn't like it?
I didn't love it, but I almost felt like they needed that. I think going through all of it, even though I was the one going through it, it was the easiest for me compared to the rest of my family.
That.
Like, I was the one going through it. I had all the information. I knew what I was feeling. But everyone around me, like, wanted to love and support and be connected to it. But you can't.
Mm.
Like, they wanted to show their support as much as possible. But, like, I'm a person who's going through this and I don't love
that sort of attention.
Right. So it was harder for them to get through it almost. Like, I can imagine for my mom, like, that was probably the hardest for her because, like, I'm her daughter, but I'm going through it and I need space to go through it.
Mm. Speaking to that, volumes to anybody being sick with anything and those around you like coping and trying to show their support in one language when it might not be the language that you need. Not to say that, like, obviously it doesn't sound like you're upset with them or anything, but like, it just speaks to everybody goes through the sickness when somebody is up against something like cancer.
Yeah, everybody feels it. Like, I had cancer, but it affected each member of my family in a very different way. Like, I have a much younger brother. Like, how did he feel watching his older sister, who's cared for him, go through this? Like, it affects everyone in different ways. And I think, you know, them showing up with their hats on allowed them to feel like, you know, they're showing their support and that I feel their love. And, you know, that was the only time that we filled the chemo room with like 20 people. That was a very pre-COVID experience.
Knowing you, from what I'm taking from it, like, it wasn't like you wanted to fully be alone. It was just like, this is interesting.
Right. Like, I kind of let them be there, but like, I was still like doing my own thing. Like, okay, everyone's here. Like, great.
Do you think that somebody in your position, though, who maybe would feel overwhelmed by that, how would you recommend they voice to their loved ones that like the language of being loved is not working for them? Because for you, it was like not working, but it was just like, okay, you're over there, I'm over here. But for somebody that's like getting anxious about it, or it's making them feel like a sick person, like how can you use your voice during that time?
It's so hard. I don't know, because I'm the type of person that can like roll with it a little bit. And like, I really recognize from the beginning that I was the sick person, but that it did affect everyone. And I think that's a really hard realization for, I'm sure, many people who are going through something similar, that you want to still be respectful of other people and not ignore your own needs at the same time. But I always think like being vocal and being clear is the best advice. Like, you know, we would also like get messages from friends like, we're here for you, whatever you need. But
sorry if that was me.
No, I mean, I don't know if it was you. I don't remember. But you guys like sent stuff. You guys were like, you as a friend, you were all so supportive. And everyone shows their support in a way that they can.
I remember what I did, actually, because I was in D.C., but I don't know how helpful it was. And I'm curious, because I think when somebody gets sick, we all want to send them something or show our support in some way and feel connected to it for whatever reason. When somebody gets sick, like, I think it's also very sobering for everyone around you to be like, oh, I'm not invincible.
It makes you question your own mortality.
Mortality, right? It brings up the question, that the thought of mortality that we conveniently brush away. So then you're super connected to it, you know, it just kind of like hyper charges things. But anyway, I remember I sent you either a gift card to like Seamless or a food delivery or food
it's
itself.
The best gift you could send.
I was hoping so. Because I remember thinking like, what could I do? Okay, well, she probably doesn't want to cook or make meals, but I wasn't a parent at that time. So I wasn't thinking it like, what does she really need? So sending food is a good idea.
Sending food, honestly, the gift card, like DoorDash, Seamless, Uber Eats, whatever it is, because then it's, I can get whatever I want at my own time. Like, we had my son's school at the time organized like this prepared food delivery service of kid-friendly food, which was amazing, because then I knew my kids were having nutritious foods. Like, not everything sort of fell off the rails because I wasn't well enough all the time to prepare all the foods that I wanted. But things like a Seamless delivery card are great, or even saying like something specific, or like, I'm going to bring you a dozen bagels today. Does that work? Right. Where it's like so clear of what's coming instead of just this overarching, I'm here for you, you know, which is also nice,
no, I know.
But it doesn't translate to like a concrete to-do list item.
No, I think that it's so important to hear the feedback from people that have gone through it, because I think we default back to like, I'm here for you, and just like common phrases that like, sounds like that's even like triggering to you a little bit,
No, I appreciate like a thinking of you with a heart, because that's like, it's nice to know that someone is thinking of you. And also not
everybody could send money.
Everyone can has the time to lend. And I think you have to respect people that they are where they are too. And you want to hope that you're surrounded by people that are giving what they can.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
Okay, let me ask you this. I think that when people get sick, it becomes like, and this could totally be the wrong word, and you're a teacher by trade, so you can tell me, but it becomes a little like voyeuristic. Like everybody wants to be part of the story.
Totally.
I don't know if you knew Sam who passed away. Like, you know, who's Jacqueline, my best friend's best friend.
And I went to college with her.
Right, you know Sam. Right. Yeah. When Sam got sick and was dying, like the internet went crazy with like, I was her best friend. I was her best friend. I was her best friend. To the point where like, I had to take a step back and be like, I don't even know what the reality of like our level of friendship was at that point, because every memory that you have with that person becomes like higher up in your brain of like, you know what I mean? Like everybody wants to be like, I knew her. I knew her. I know her. I know her. I know her. And post everything that they can. I don't know what it is. And there's a level of like something about it that just made me uneasy and does make me uneasy. So my question that I'm kind of cruising into is like, can you just tell when somebody's coming from like a genuine place of like, I'm here for you versus like, I'll feel guilty if I don't text her because she's going through something hard, or like, I'm worried that our friendship will fade away if I don't text during this hard time.
I think there's a little of that for sure. I think I could tell when people were reaching out either because they thought they would gain something from it, because I don't know, everyone wants to be friends with the sick girl, or
yeah,
it became,
what is that?
Well, I think any type of, not that having cancer is a scandal, but it's something that like shocks the status quo, where everyone wants to be attached to that, whether it's cancer or, you know, when Sam passed away. It's like there's this big moment that everyone draws their attention to, and people love to attach themselves to that.
Right.
So like when I posted on Instagram, I was like so hesitant to do it. And I sat with my husband and I was like, what am I posting this for? Like, is it so I could get, you know, 1,000 likes and people being like, thinking of you, like, you got this, like, you know, strong arm emoji. Like, what is it all for? And I like to think that people want to attach themselves to it for two reasons. One, because they actually want to show their support. And two, because it's so shocking that now it's like taking up space in their brain, either because they're afraid that something like this could happen to them, or if it just plants this in their brain where I need to be more mindful about things in my own health because you never know what could happen. Mm-hmm. I like to think that most people were reaching out just out of well wishes and wishing that, you know, I was going to be okay, whether we were close or not, or I don't know.
Right. Did people come out of the woodworks?
People totally came out of the woodwork. And now, especially like being on the other side, if anyone knows anyone who is like diagnosed with breast cancer, finds a lump, finds out they have BRCA or any other genetic mutation, I get a phone call. Mm-hmm. Like I talk to so many women, mothers of daughters who are going through it, husbands who are like in shock and don't know what to do. I talk to people all the time. My husband talks to people too, to like support husbands whose wives are diagnosed with breast cancer. And I think that is maybe the reason why I posted in the first place, that like I never felt unique and I knew I wasn't alone. So now I like that I could be that person to talk people through.
Wait, so when you posted, where were you going? At what stage?
So my family goes away for Passover every year, and I was diagnosed like right around the time of Passover, and I was so adamant with my oncologist that I wanted to be able to go on my family's Passover trip, and I wanted to have my hair for that trip. Like, we take family photos every year, and I was like, I don't care what we do, but I need hair on this trip to take these photos. So we really worked my chemo around this trip. Like, I had my first chemo treatment on a Friday. I must have left for Passover, like, the next week, because I lost my hair like 2 weeks to the day after my first treatment. And we took these amazing family photos. And then like that was what I posted to say, like, I have breast cancer. And it was like, It just felt like, I don't know.
Yeah. Why does that moment like slow you down so much?
Because it was like this moment where it was like, at first it was just like my family were dealing with this, I'm going through treatment, and then all of a sudden I like put it out into the world, and then it made it real. It wasn't a secret anymore, and I sort of opened myself up to everyone knowing about it and absorbing it however they would. And you know, it just made it, all of a sudden I was going through it alone, but now it was like everyone's there too.
That was the moment of like the pre and post, would you say, or was like the diagnosis that moment?
The story of diagnosis is really like the pre and post. My husband was in London at the time for work, and I feel like
far away when
like so far away. It was a Monday afternoon, and at the time I was working as a private tutor, and I picked up my student from school every Monday. So I was leaving my apartment, going to walk to pick her up, and I got a phone call while I was waiting for the elevator, and my doctor was like, "Hi, like, just want to let you know, like, we got your test results back. You have breast cancer."
On a voicemail?
No, like, literally, like, on the phone. Oh. And she was like, "I just sent you an email with all the information you need to know, with all the doctors. They're waiting to hear from you. Make those calls and call me. Like, I'm here for you." It was a great conversation. It lasted all of 1 minute.
Seriously?
And then I had to go to work. So I walked to pick up the student from school. And I called my husband, like, on my way. I was like, "Hey, I know you're in London." This was a voicemail. I was like, "Hey, I know you're in London. I just got the test results back. Like, don't come home. Call me. Like, it's all going to be fine."
Oh, so you didn't tell him on the voicemail.
I told him on the voicemail, you did. I think. All right. Savage. Now I can't remember.
Okay, but you told him while he was in London.
I told him while he was in London, and I said, "Don't come home. I'll figure it out." While I was in between tutoring sessions that day, I called all the doctors and made my appointments for the next day. And like that week, I went to all the appointments by myself while he was still in London, and just like got the ball rolling of like figuring out what this all was.
So yeah. Going back to your kids, you had a 3.5 and a 1.5 year old. Mm-hmm. 1.5, like, was there
Slowly.
Yeah, it's exactly slowly. So I didn't realize how young Cooper was at the time, but how did you explain it to Aiden or Aiden and Cooper?
So I didn't explain it to Cooper at all. He was 1.5 years. He didn't have like the comprehension to understand anything. For Aiden, the biggest thing was the hair. He also is like a very bright kid. He's very perceptive, very smart, and he was very attached to me, also very attached to my hair. Like, when he was upset, he would like cuddle with me and like hold my hair, and like to fall asleep, he would hold onto like a lock of my hair. And it was the hardest thing for me to tell him, but you know,
how do you frame that to a 3.5-year-old?
You know, in explaining it to kids, whether they're 3 or even a little bit older, just being clear and concise was the advice that I got. And also that, like, leave it open for questions after you share with them. And I'll tell what I shared with Aiden. But that they are probably not thinking about it as deeply as I was as a mother. And that he's probably not going to have questions, and kids are super resilient. And as long as I share with him from the perspective of like, this is happening and I'm going to be okay. Like, I set the tone for how he's going to receive it.
Probably true about anything with kids.
It really is. And this feels a lot more major because it is. But to a kid, it's like I'm telling him anything else. Like, he doesn't have at 3.5 the understanding that this is so serious unless I present it that way. And it doesn't benefit him to have him feel the weight of it. So all I said to him was, mommy's sick. I have a boo-boo in my boobies. And I'm going to take really strong medicine. And the strong medicine is going to make my hair fall out. But that's how we know the medicine is working. And that's all I said.
Were you coached to say that? It's like,
I spoke to a social worker at the hospital. I used to work in a school and I was friends with the school social worker. I spoke to her about it. And the advice that I got was just be very clear, simple, and then say like, and do you have any questions about that? And he didn't. The day that I shaved my head, I like, you know, I got all these books to read to him about losing hair. And I started to read it to him that night. And he could not have been less interested in this book that I was reading to him. And I was like trying to have this moment and he just could not have cared less. But then, you know, I have a video of it too, which is so triggering to watch. But, you know, I'm sitting on the couch. I was wearing a beanie. I would wear these like little like cotton hats in the house. And he was sitting next to me. And all of a sudden I see him like starting to touch his own hair. And, you know, he was like, is my hair going to fall out? And I was like, no, like your hair is not going to fall out. Just mommy's hair is going to fall out. But that's okay. Like, that's how we know it's working. And that was enough for him. And he didn't have any questions about it.
What do you mean triggering?
Like when I watch the video and I see just his body language and mine, just I felt heavy in that moment having to share it with him. But now I also realize he didn't feel heavy. Like, it was a bigger moment for me than it was for him.
In looking at that video, that's what you take?
Yeah.
Or do you think you just handled it like really well by taking the heaviness away from him because you were so instinctually mother?
But I think like that's the role of a mother, is to try to lessen the load.
Period. Sick or not. Well,
right. That's what we're here for, is you can't lessen every load, but like this was one that he didn't need to feel.
I think you can lessen. You could try to lessen every load. You can't get rid of the loads,
exactly.
Right? But like.
But that's, yeah, that was sort of how I felt my role through all of it. Like now, like my Cooper, my little one is now 5.5.
That's crazy.
We look at Time Hop. I love Time Hop. I love an archived photo. I love it. But like he looks at these pictures of me when I was bald and he just like brushes over it. He doesn't.
No, right. Because he also like at that age, they haven't like cognitively associated like no hair with being sick necessarily, or even a beauty standard, or
not any of it. Like I wonder as they get older and they start to learn more about these types of things and being sick and losing your hair, if they'll like look at me and be like, that happened to you, like but maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just keep living their lives and it won't be anything that affects them.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
So how long did it take for you to get, and I don't know if this is the correct word, but like remission or no, like what's the correct word? Because they did the mastectomy, so is that...
Yeah.
You still then had to go for chemo, so it's not just like... So that always confused me. Like, if we're taking it all out, why do we got to do the chemo?
So that was my question too. But like cancer, yes, it's like localized. My cancer was localized in my breast, but there could still be cells floating around. So we did the chemotherapy first, and I could tell physically, like I could not feel my lump anymore after two treatments. So I knew that the chemo was doing its job. And then after my 6 months of chemo, they do the surgery and they said from the surgery that I had clear margins. There was no evidence of cancer outside of where the tumor was. They took out a few lymph nodes just to confirm that it didn't actually spread to my lymph nodes. So from that point on, they say that I have no evidence of disease, mm-hmm. which is sort of a safe way of saying that you're looking good. It's not a 100% there is no cancer because they can't really know that 100% for sure. It could be too small. It could just be, you know, floating around in there and who knows for sure. But they say that I had a complete response to chemo. And
how many rounds of chemo?
Like 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was four rounds of these two drugs called Adriamycin and Cytoxan and then 12 rounds of Taxol. And within those 12 rounds of Taxol, I also had four rounds of carboplatin. So it was 16 sessions.
I mean, it's really incredible that like you describe not having symptoms the way we typically think of.
I think there's a little bit of like looking back with rose-colored glasses. Like
for sure.
With the first part with the Adriamycin and Cytoxan, it was every other week. So for the first week after, I was a little groggier. I definitely experienced sort of like a brain fog, sort of like you're coming down with the flu feeling.
Body aches.
Not even body aches, just like a mental fog. But like I said, I never threw up once. I never...
And they give you like, when
that.
You said earlier, they put other meds in. Do you mean like Zofran, like an anti-nausea med?
So they give you, before you start chemo, they give you steroids and other anti-nauseas. And then in my house, like with me, I had Zofran that I never even had to take. I had other anti-nauseas. The night that I had chemo, I would have to take like a Xanax or something to go to sleep because from the steroid that day, I'm like
amped up.
You know, like really amped up. So the first night was not ideal to fall asleep, but again, not major debilitating symptoms. And then when I switched to the Taxol, that had more of like a physical side effect where I would experience like bone pain, like my lower back would hurt, my hips would hurt. By the end of it, I started to get like I would get really itchy feet, which was like a precursor to neuropathy, which it never developed into neuropathy. So not to like make light of chemo was a breeze, like there were still side effects. There were still effects that it had on my body, but not anything that was going to stop me from living my life. Like towards the end, so my birthday was in August. So I started chemo in like March, April, and August I had chemo. And I went with my family for dinner. We went to Laura Fish Bar and we're sitting at the restaurant. I'm wearing these wedges and all of a sudden the bottom of my feet start to itch. Like so uncontrollably, I literally had to grab a fork from the table and like reach under and use the fork to get into my shoe to scratch my foot. Like,
wow. That's a good reminder that you never know what anyone's going through. Because if someone saw you at Laura Fish Bar, like that girl's disgusting. But
she grabbed the fork, scratching her foot under the table. Yeah. So disgusting. But like, I had no choice. Like nothing could make it feel better.
And what was that exactly?
It has to do with the way that the Taxol affects your nerves.
Yeah.
I don't have it anymore. But.
And do you have any long-term side effects, like body aches or pains or anything that you know of?
I have no long-term anything. I'm not on any medication currently. I guess for a lot of people with a lot of different types of breast cancers, there's drugs that you take afterwards for like 5 years, 10 years, that reduce your risk of recurrence. But with the type of breast cancer I have, there aren't any drugs for that. So on the one hand, it's like, great, I'm not taking any medication. But on the other side, it's there's nothing that I'm currently doing to prevent my cancer from coming back. You know, like by
medically. You're
medically
still doing things.
I mean, I like to say I live a healthy lifestyle. I think, but that, like, that's part of it. And mentally, mentally I'm healthy. I don't really think often about it coming back. I wouldn't say I never think about it coming mm-hmm. back, but mm-hmm. more often than not, I'm not thinking about it.
And what about Matt, your partner?
He's like the strongest rock there is.
But rocks have feelings underneath. Like, do you guys discuss fears of it coming back, or do you both know you have it and you don't talk about it, or is there any sort of connection point on that?
We definitely talk about it because it comes up for me every once in a while where, like I said, people call me to talk about it. So I'm constantly being brought back to that time in my life by sharing my experience with other people. So when that happens, and, you know, I hear about stories where their case is less severe than mine, and I talk to women who have much more severe diagnoses where they really don't know what the outcome is going to be. And I still try to support these women as best I can. But you can't do that without bringing it back to yourself sometimes. Like, you know, we talked to someone who's close to us who, you know, I coached her through the beginning of her diagnosis. And then she ended up being diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, which is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to support others when not then thinking, well, what if it happened to me? And then my husband and I communicate about everything. So, of course, I'm going to bring that to him. And he supports that. We talk a lot about it. But what we both also try to say is, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And we can handle it when it's in front of us. But until that, like, there's no use worrying about it. We can talk about that it's a possibility, but it's nothing more than a possibility.
Is there more maintenance checking in that you need to do versus like me, who once a year, you know, or whatever it is, to, you know, check on women's health stuff?
Yeah. So because I'm also BRCA positive, there's other parts of my body that I need to worry about. Being BRCA positive puts you at a higher risk for breast cancer and ovarian cancer.
But that's like happenstance that you are BRCA positive. That had nothing to do with the cancer that you had.
My cancer was likely caused by my genetic mutation.
Oh, okay.
What's crazy about my situation is that my mom had breast cancer when she was maybe 50. So like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. But when she was when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she tested for BRCA and she was negative. So we always were under the assumption that because she was negative, I'm negative. But genetics come from two parents. And
it's really wild.
It's wild. And so my BRCA status obviously came from my father.
And you didn't know it until after you had cancer,
because
right?
For men, there are, being BRCA positive as a man does put you at higher risk for things, but not to the level that breast cancer. Like, if you're a woman with breast cancer, I think the statistics are like you have an 80% chance of developing breast cancer in your lifetime. And 80% is more of like, it's not if you get breast cancer, it's when you get breast cancer. Like, it will likely happen. So I think now, like, you know, if I had known, would I have had a risk-reducing surgery, like having a preventative mastectomy? Probably, but that wasn't option for me. Maybe when I knew I was done having kids after I had Cooper, so I maybe would have. Like,
and just having a mastectomy reduces your risk by?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it drastically reduces your risk.
Just by getting rid of that tissue or mm-hmm. cell, like what
exactly it like takes away the host of like where else, it could create.
Right, but right. And a lot of people I know that we know like that are BRCA positive but mm-hmm. never had anything, they just get mastectomies, which is like
a lot of people do.
That's a hard one for me to swallow, like getting a surgery before you know that there's
but
a problem.
It's almost like you're taking your health into your own hands, where it's like, I know this could happen, sure. and I trust the science behind it, that like it is going to help me to live longer. And so I was finished with treatment and everything in January of 2020. And then a year later, I had a surgery to remove my fallopian tubes, which there's evidence that removing your fallopian tubes reduces your risk of developing ovarian cancer. So I did that. That was also minor surgery, and happy to do anything that's going to reduce my risk of developing ovarian cancer, which I don't know how to say it medically, but basically ovarian cancer has a lot of silent symptoms. So you don't know that you have it until it's much further along, and then it becomes harder to treat. So now I see a gynecologic oncologist every, 3 times a year, maybe. to go for ultrasounds and just make sure that things are good there. Eventually, I'll have those taken out too, my ovaries.
Okay, but you had your fallopian tubes out, which means you can't have children, correct? Oh, you would have to then be IVF.
I would have to go through IVF, but I knew when I gave birth to my second son that we wanted two children. We had our two boys, like our family was done growing, which is honestly a blessing because I know for a lot of people, when they find out that they have breast cancer when they're young, their families aren't complete yet and they have to think about the fertility aspect or started.
Yeah.
And they have to go through fertility treatments and, you know, egg retrievals before you start chemo and then the decision to grow your family or not using your own body and the effects hormonally that that could have to reignite your cancer. Or I know a lot of people use surrogates afterwards because they don't want to take that risk.
I remember really sitting with you talking about it, or I think it was a conversation with you being like, it's incredible how the, for lack of a better word, strange timing of your life, like getting married early compared to like our social norm, like 25 isn't that young in the world, but like in our social world, it was very young. Having kids at 26 or whatever you were.
27 and 29.
29, just the 27 even just starting is like, you know, I was just not ready for kids at that age. Like, it's just amazing how your choices in the moment worked out so well for you in relationship to the cancer. Like, I can't think of one other friend that would have been like family complete. I'm good with this many kids. Not worrying about that aspect of their life. And it just felt like you made such good decisions without realizing.
I guess at the time, though, like there was, I did have this feeling of like, I'm rushing. Not that I'm rushing hastily, but like it did feel like my life was like moving at a rapid pace, like college, grad school, meet my husband, and like move in together, get married. Like it was very, it was like a train that's like chugging along. There were no lulls of just like, life. It was like things were moving. And I don't know if it was like the universe doing that so that everything would sort of be set before
this event.
My diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Like looking back, like it has all worked out. I couldn't have planned it better. Like, you know, maybe I would have, if I wish I would have known my risk for these things sooner, like, because I'm the type of person that likes to take charge and handle things. And that was one of the hardest parts, honestly, was that this was all happening in my body and I didn't know about it.
Mm.
And that felt like, like I'm on top of myself and I take good care of myself. And how is this happening? And I didn't know. But I didn't know that it was something I should think about. So then that changed everything. But in general, it was kind of like the timeline was what it was supposed to be. Like everything has happened as it should.
Well, I mean, your story really is incredible. It's just also nice to hear like a positive story. And it's cool to see how you were this like private person and now you're this person that stands on a stage and holds fundraisers and speaks your story. And I don't know if you're not forced to like step out of your shell, but you are like stepping into your, I'll call it your truest self because of this.
I think I've been really lucky that I'm able to share about it. And breast cancer especially is something that happens mostly to women. And this has allowed me to support other women, which I think is really important. And this happened to me, but I'm not, like I said before, I'm not unique. I'm not the only person that this happened to. And thankfully, everything went the way that it did, that it has allowed me to come out on the other side with this message to share that you can get through this and you need to be aware of your own health and your own body and know what's happening. Breast cancer and you know, head to toe, everything else. Like, no one is going to know our bodies better than we will.
Facts.
So if we're not paying attention to it, who is?
Mm-hmm.
But I really have liked the opportunity to share my story and speak to other women, whether it's like, you know, you came to that lunch that I spoke at, and that was a really nice experience. And I think it's important because, like, I'm just like a normal girl, and this happened to me, and it could happen to anyone.
And do you have any like three pieces of advice for anyone, not necessarily with breast cancer, but I mean, just like listening to your story, I've taken away at least one, which is if you have a lump, push for scanning. Mm-hmm. Whether they say that it's probably fine, advocate for yourself and go for it. Is there any other like pieces of wisdom like that that you would recommend to just all women?
I think that's the biggest one is to advocate for yourself because no one else is going to do it more than you will. And to find doctors that that listen to you. There's so many stories I've heard of women who were brushed off by their doctors, and that has drastic effects. Like, timing with things like this, timing is so important, and it's up to you to push things along and don't settle until you feel like your concerns are being heard. I think, you know, with my, like I said, with my diagnosis, like, that was the worst news I heard. And then we just kept moving towards getting better. That was the focus. It wasn't wallowing in what I'm going through. Of course, there were moments I cried in my shower. Like, that's, you know, it wasn't all rainbows and butterflies. But to keep trying to, it sounds so cheesy, like, try to stay positive, but, like, find the things that are still positive and try to keep things as true to you, even though you may have this, like, monumental diagnosis that changes things. It doesn't have to change everything.
No,
what
that's,
do you think?
I think that's, I mean, I haven't been in your shoes, so I'm not going to give advice on something I don't know about, but I'm definitely very inspired by the fact that you and Matt together kept things as normal. I think whenever I've gotten sick with anything, whether it be COVID or, you know, something not, you know, chronic, something very short, acute, just I mentally go down with the ship really fast. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like it's going to be forever. It feels like time stops, you know, and just the fact that Matt was there to keep things moving normal for the two of you, for you individually, for the kids, is just a reminder that, like, two things can kind of be true. You can be sick and you can do these things and, you know, at the same time, rest as much as you possibly need for your individual circumstance. But I think a lot of the time normal goes out with the second you get a diagnosis.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing, is the two things can be true at the same time. I can be sick. I can, you know, have cancer. I can be bald, but I can still go on a date night with my husband. I can still try to look as cute as I can with no hair on my head or my eyebrows. But, like, the two things can coexist. And just because you have this one thing, you know, this giant elephant on your shoulder, doesn't mean that the whole ship has to crumble. Like, you might need a lifeboat for a little while. Like, it's not going to be that way 100% of the time. But to try to create that sense of normalcy, or that, like, we're going to keep on trucking even when you have something. And it's not just breast cancer, it's anything.
Yeah. I guess my last question is, I don't know, I guess I'm a little bit more, categorically just think of myself as more of, like, a spiritual person than you are. Not to say that you're not, you're actually spiritual in other ways than how I categorize myself. But when she was sick, you know, Evan and I were, as I put it, like, jolted awake. Like, you know, it's been, by the way, thank you for supporting me through that. And our group of girlfriends.
I hope it was helpful.
It was so helpful. You guys sent the cutest basket. You put it together. Yeah. It was so well done. It made us feel so loved, and you got it right. But anyway, we were so jolted awake to what matters. Like, even since then, it's been 2 months now, and Evan has made a lot of lifestyle shifts to really live the life that he wants to live, with, like, family and a little bit more prominence with work-life balance type of a thing. And for myself, I know that, like, when we were in the hospital and the days leading after, I was so grateful and so clear on what I wanted my life to be. And as we get more distanced from the event, my biggest worry is, like, losing that perspective. Did you have that jolted awake moment? Yeah, I guess that's the first part.
I didn't have, like, a moment where I was like, yes, like, now I know what's important in life. But I think in general, having gone through that experience, I do have sort of like a shift in my thinking over
a permanent shift in my thinking over
how I prioritize my time, how I prioritize my energy towards things. I think you know this about me. Like, I don't care about any kind of drama. I will not insert myself into any kind of unnecessary drama that's so trivial.
No, you do
anything
not.
Trivial.
I don't know if you did before either, though.
I don't think I did before either, but I think now it's even to a point where, like, I don't even entertain things that will take away from my positive feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, I won't even go down the road.
You don't.
I don't do things I don't want to do.
No, you don't.
At all. And I believe so fully that you make time for what's important to you, no matter how inconvenient it may seem. And that is something that, it's not easy, but that I really try to live by, that you make time for what's important for you. And yes, of course, sometimes life gets in the way and sometimes I can't live that to the extent that I would want to. But, like, nothing is more important to me than my husband and my kids. I will never put anything in front of them, period. And I just try to like protect our unit so much. And I don't know if that's because of cancer or just in general, my family is so important, but that's something that I think going through something where I didn't know 100% that I was going to be okay. It's like, there's nothing more important to me than them. And like my close friends feeling like family, like that's the most important to me.
Well, that's definitely true. You are zeroed in, and it gives me great hope that I will continue to be zeroed in without having to continuously live through the trauma, you know?
Yes. And I think like the farther you get away from what happened with Soli, you'll forget a lot of it. Like this, it will still sit in your body.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to go away forever. But that clarity of shift of focus of like, okay, this happened. Now we're going to do this. That becomes lighter, but it doesn't go away. Like you experienced this, your family went through this, like it was jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, not that it's like nice for them to happen, but like every once in a while, we all, even now being 4 years down the road, I have to stop and be like, okay, this is what's important.
Right. So we're constantly like losing clarity, coming back into clarity, losing clarity, coming back into clarity. Okay.
But having gone through that, that'll be like a focus of like, okay, and that's why all these things are so important. It like brings you back of like, if you do lose focus and need to come back, it's like there was a time where I didn't know that we were going to all walk out of the hospital together. And it's like, okay, that's why all of this is important. Or like, that's why I'm not going to give my energy to this. Like, it's not worth it. I don't have it in me. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. It's like these hard things that happen to us that we go through, we don't wish for, but at the same time, they give so much meaning and purpose back into our mm-hmm. lives. And it's like this weird thing of we do not wish it, but like, can you imagine your life without this with this instant?
Honestly,
instant.
No, I wouldn't wish it on anyone. And I'm not like happy I went through it, but like it's such a huge part of my life that I don't know what my life would be without having gone through that. Like, I don't know what I would be without having gone through that.
Yeah. This is your new form and we like you for it.
Thanks. I'm happy here.
Thank you for being a guest and sharing your story. I know that it will save lives, change lives, transform lives, uplift lives. And I know that it's not like your natural to speak to the public. So I really, really do appreciate it. And I love you.
I love you. Thanks for having me.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.